Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 693, Hunters in the Dark, recorded live on July 17th, 2019. Three, two, one. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Dust Storm.
I am your co-host, Godzilla T.
And we are here after many, many technical issues, at least for the live stream part. It's been quite a 30 minutes that we've been late on.
It's broken.
DT's computer's broken. Now my stream's broken. Everything's just broken.
Oh, I have to run through the latest update here on the PC before we get into the regular podcast. Okay,
yes.
Started out, major failure. Okay, we put motherboard in it. We put another motherboard in it. We've now swapped over to a mechanical hard drive because both my SSDs are dead, and I'm having trouble re-registering the operating system with Windows. Yay!
God bless you.
For those of you in the live stream, might see it behind me. I know this does the audio portion no good, but there it is, running on a backup, and I'm still waiting for it to load. It's been booting for about 3 minutes now, or actually about 5 minutes now. Anyway, on to Halo stuff.
It's been booting for a while. Yes, on to Halo stuff. So we've got Hunters in the Dark, finally read by me. Yay!
Yay, and I've only read it like 12 times. Okay.
Yeah. It'll be fun when I actually go to read all these books, a second time. That'll be interesting if I ever get there. I'll get there. It's just a matter of when. So we've got a little bit of housekeeping, starting with Frag and Friday. How we do last night, GT? Or not last night, last week.
We did really well, actually. Had a lot of fun. We did play some Husky Raid, but we pretty much jumped into Fiesta and Super Fiesta real quick. Our party got too big for the Husky Raid map. We did play some Warzone towards the end. We wound up with most of a full team of Warzone, so we played some Warzone. Had some fun, won a couple, lost a couple. Yeah, pretty
usual.
Typical night. Nobody wanted to play Assault, though. Everybody wanted to play regular Warzone. They think Assault's sweaty. No, regular Warzone's sweaty. Assault's a breeze.
Yeah, I'm about to say Assault's not sweaty, and you also had the double XP going on as well.
Yeah, so I missed out on that. Course, you know, it's like, you know, there's more than one day in the weekend too, but hey, I've been distracted by technical issues,
otherwise preoccupied, so to speak. Nah, it's all good. So yeah, Dragon Friday was a lot of fun. I joined in for like I think the last hour or so it was good. It's a good time. As for the achievement stream, it didn't happen. Ended up having some Bible study stuff that we completely forgot about that we needed to read on. So we had to do that. So fortunately, nothing. Yeah. But I actually might be back early enough Sunday after Outpost because Philly is just a 2-hour drive for me and we'll probably leave around 7:30. So I might be back in time to actually do the achievement stream this coming Sunday.
Cool.
We'll see how exhausted I am. I think that was pretty much it for updates. We've got a couple of news things to go through before we jump on into the book. I wanted to touch on a couple of meme things because there's been several memes going around lately. First one being the face app with everyone posting pictures of what they would look like when they're old. And there's been a few cool Halo ones so far. I think the one that most sticks out to me is Team Respawn posted one of Forge, Sergeant Forge. And yeah, he looks like a pretty good grizzly old guy. this one's legit. I think there's a few other good ones out there, but this is the one that kind of really stood out. And the other thing that has been out there is the whole storming Area 51 stuff.
Oh, that's stupid.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely stupid, but the memes coming out of it is very entertaining.
I'm sorry. People, don't do it. You cross that line, they have every right to just shoot your butt.
That's probably what's going to happen if something and not...
think about this. They can't kill y'all. Bull. It is a military base. They have weapons that make you go bye-bye instantly.
Especially Area 51. No, I mean, the concept, yeah, that's just
utter stupidity. No, but I'm not the memes that are funny. Stupid.
But you have to admit the memes are funny.
I can't believe that it even got that far, actually.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those head scratchers as to, wow, our society really is like
that's
this?
Stupid. Oh, work retail. You'll understand.
Yeah, I'm sure you get plenty of that on a weekly basis, if not a daily basis.
Oh, I'm out where normal people are. You work in the city retail? Oh my God. There's a reason I left the city and got a job out in the country.
Fair enough. Like there's ones with like people getting the needler, people have like bringing home a ghost to their significant other. There's Halo 3 where you're driving with the Arbiter and it's like me and my alien driving away from Area 51. There's quite a few good memes for Halo that have come out of this thing.
Oh yeah. There's lots of stuff out there.
It's so good. There are plenty of Halo memes. Those are just kind of the top picks. And yeah, there's plenty of other ones that are not Halo either, but yeah, figure just mentioning the Halo ones would be enough. So we have a little bit of an update on the file conversion for Halo 3, Halo 4, and Halo Reach. This is the one-time conversion that 343 is doing for free, or kind of on behalf of the community. It's still probably safe to say that they'll do it maybe ad hoc for a couple of other big prominent maps if they don't hit this conversion cycle. But I think for the most part, this is going to be it. Anything and everything that you want over that's close and dear to your heart, whether it's a game type or a map, you better start working on this now, because this is pretty much within the month.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this is Halo 3 and Halo Reach and Halo 4. I know last time we talked about this, we thought it might be like you probably have to set up your maps and game types at once. But with this updated news, I'm starting to think differently. So game types will be locked and transferred 10 a.m. Pacific time on August 12th. And then the maps will be 10 a.m. Pacific time on August 26th. So that's a 2-week difference.
Yeah. You got to be on it.
You definitely do.
On the 13th, you better be pulling stuff down and putting stuff back up.
You best be doing it.
Yeah. So,
One day for game types, one day for maps. And they say, so Postum says, by allowing players to fill up their file share with game types during the first pool, and again with maps for the second pool, player can maximize the slots being used. So that's a plus.
Fair enough. Yeah.
There's a lot more maps than game types, but hey, that helps. That definitely helps.
Yeah. I wouldn't stress over the game types as much, because those are the easy things to recreate. because that's just settings, you know, game type settings. So those are easy to recreate. I would focus on making sure you get every single map up there you want.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you know, the game types, I understand why they're doing it.
It's
a pain to set them up again, but it's nothing like having to reforge a map on Halo 3.
I would agree with that. That's a pain.
I would focus on getting the most important game types put up there, like the ones that will be the hardest to set up again. You know, like the VIP for race and, you know, stuff like that. But in Halo 3, for that matter. But I'd really focus on your maps and make sure you put up the maps that you really want there, because you've got a limited number of slots.
Yep.
Like, if I still had my original library, I had 100 maps for Halo 3. Just multiplayer maps. That didn't count my race maps.
So how many accounts have you created to get all your maps covered?
I haven't done anything yet. That's a this weekend project. The black box behind me has been eating up most of my spare time lately.
Sure.
And trying to find some way to where I can still do my other stuff and keep going. It's sheer dumb luck. You know, if this had happened a day later, I would have had the money that I would just, all I'd had to do is order brand new parts and it'd be fixed. It'd be done. I could have ordered, you know, brand new Ryzen chip, board, RAM, and been done with it. New hard drives, because I had the money. But I spent that money on a new laptop, because my old laptop, it was having, I was asking more of it than it was prepared to give. So I bought myself a new laptop, and then my desktop went.
It's like, are you abandoning me? Are you giving priority to a inferior machine?
The sad part is, this is my laptop can run circles around my desktop. It's amazing
how far
technology has come where a mobile processor can outdo a desktop. Granted, you know, it's a 6-year-old desktop, but still.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested. I'm probably going to still be looking to do an upgrade in the next few months. I'm going to watch what the Ryzen prices do, because I might be picking myself up like a 2700X.
Dang.
And board and everything. I don't know, because, I mean, even the third gen Ryzens aren't that expensive. You know, it's, you know, I don't know. I haven't decided yet. But the second gen stuff should, since it's now basically obsolete, prices should be dropping on it relatively quickly, where I can pick up a pretty decent processor for a little bit of money. And it'll keep up with what I need to do. I mean, you know, the one I've got keeps up with what I do, and it's 6 years old.
Yeah.
But the fact that when things break, you got to go to the used market.
That does suck. But the Ryzen chip, if and when I ever upgrade my desktop, which, I don't know, by the time I upgrade it, maybe Intel has something that kind of competes with the Ryzen chip, but that looks enticing.
Well, the nice thing is if, with the way Ryzen's working, they're using the same socket. Now, I can buy the lower-end CPU, buy a better, higher-end board. So instead of buying the $100 board, buy the $250 board. And if I need to later on, I can upgrade to the Ryzen 3 chip.
That's one thing about processors that's always bugged me, is that every generation, it seems like it's a new socket type with Intel.
Well, with Intel, that's a reason. A lot of reasons is because there's been pretty major overhaul to the structure inside.
Yeah.
And Intel doesn't want to put new CPUs on older boards. If you also look, the CPUs themselves have gotten much larger.
It's like cram more things into them.
I mean, you know, a processor today is the size of the entire mechanism for the processor on my desktop. You know, the chip on that i7 4770K that I've got, it's, you know, it's an inch and a quarter by an inch and a quarter.
Yeah.
Now these chips are pushing almost 2 inches in each direction. So, you know, they physically got a lot larger.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I figured what the heck, I'm tearing it all apart. Might as well update the cooler. So I bought an AIO.
Yeah.
And the AIO, it has a 3-inch circle. That's how big the heatsink is on it. The touch CPU. Because it's there to fit so many different CPUs. It will fit the new Ryzen chips.
I didn't realize they'd gotten that big.
It's huge.
Needs more power.
More power.
More power.
But anyway.
Wow. Okay. Now that's just impressive, I guess.
So I might be creating some more accounts this weekend.
Cool. I've got 4 accounts at my disposal if I need them.
Right now I'm at 4, but I'm not opposed to making more.
I've got to probably... I got to see if I transferred everything to my Halo 4 Xbox or if I still have some stuff on my Reach Xbox. Unless I have a hard drive floating around here somewhere, so I got to figure out where all that is.
Yeah. I've got to fire up my Halo 3 Xbox because... I have 2 old memory cards and they don't plug into USB, so different connector. So I got to fire those up, see if there's anything on those, and we'll go from there.
Memory cartridges. We've come so far.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're just thumb drives, but
yeah, with a fancy little,
with just a proprietary connector. But yeah, eventually I'm going to set that stuff up on the wall behind me.
Ooh.
For kind of a backdrop. Right now I've got a desk back there. I'm going to get that desk out of there and see if I can find some bookshelves or just hang some shelves on the wall and, you know, display some of that stuff like my Halo 3 Xbox, my Reach Xbox, stuff like that.
When I get the wall behind me finally painted, I'm going to put some shelves up there and have some Halo stuff up there. So there'll actually be a somewhat appeasable backdrop behind me, not just a white wall with some other crap in the corner.
Yeah, that's something else I need to do, is I need to scrub the wall really well or paint it, because someone might notice that there's some marks on it.
It happens.
My desk used to be in that corner, so.
So just the normal scuffs of everything.
Yeah. Basically, all I did was spin my desk 180 degrees. So that it's not facing the door to the room, it's facing that wall.
Right.
Just to kind of give me a better background.
Very nice.
You can see my old trusty laptop over here on my left. It won't be there. Once I get my desktop back together, it won't be there anymore, but there'll be a monitor there.
Very nice. I'm contemplating putting like a monitor with a little slideshow behind me or like a picture frame or something.
Yeah. My dad went to Walmart and scored a 65-inch TV for $500.
4K or 1080?
Oh, it's a 4K. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's Vizio's no-name knockoff, you know, super cheap brand.
Yeah.
But
Vizio's a good brand, though.
He doesn't care because he's never going to use the 4K. You know, he just watches broadcast TV on it. But big TV. You know, that could just be my background. You know, I could just put Halo wallpaper on that and it could be my background. I've thought about doing that too, if I had an extra $500, but I don't.
Yeah.
Actually, what I would do is I would put that TV in the living room and I'd take my living room TV and put it behind me.
How big is your living room TV?
56 inch. It's a rear projection, though.
Oh.
So it's about foot and a half deep.
It's a big sucker. Okay. Very nice.
But, you know, you get the idea.
Yep. Yep. Would you put it, like, straight in the corner, or would you... Yeah, I guess if the back's
a little bit... I'd just put it right against this wall right behind me, and off to my left, where this other wall is, probably just put some fabric or something up so that the screen doesn't reflect off this wall, off the wall to my left.
Okay.
And then, you know, refocus the camera so that, you know, it fills the back of the camera. And, you know, for, I might just load the menu for Halo 3 in just the menu screen and let that video play on that screen back there. Because if I remember right, if you sit there long enough, it actually goes into a video loop.
Like, does the menu actually disappear?
Yeah. It actually goes into almost like a screensaver.
See, I was trying to figure out how to get that the other day. I thought you had to glitch it to do that, but I guess not.
No, I really think that it's just, you got to let it sit there long enough. If I remember right, it takes like 10 or 15 minutes for it to show up.
I'm going to have to try that. Just set to the screen to not dim, I guess.
Well, this was on a 360. I don't know what it would do on an Xbox. Yeah, the 360's dim.
I thought they dimmed. I thought there was a setting for them to...
I honestly can't tell you.
It's been so long.
I don't have one currently hooked up to where I can tell you.
Fair enough. I wonder is the menu in Halo 3 back compat 4K? Because I know they like the 4K assets for Halo 3.
Well, it's a 1080p screen, so I'm really sure I can't do the 4K.
Well, even still, 1080p over 720 or whatever the resolution was for Xbox 360.
Well, Halo 3 was 1080p on the 360, wasn't it?
No, it was 720. There was never a Halo game that was native 1080 on the 360.
All I know is it looked really good.
It still looks pretty good.
Maybe that's what I'll do with my ex after I get Scarlet.
You could.
God, next year's going to be expensive.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
It already hurts, and we ain't even there yet.
Yep. So back to this legacy map and game type conversion. Postum says in here, please leave your game types and maps in your file share for at least 24 hours after the conversion. That way they can get all of them. Probably be safe to leave them on there for 48 hours. Just to kind of be absolutely sure.
I would say at least the 17th then. That's 5 days. That ought to be plenty of time.
Sure. There's a question that they answer as far as when will you get access to the maps and game modes. For the time being, it looks like whenever the respective game launches on PC is when you'll have a better idea on when your maps will be there. Sounds like they're going to be pretty much available pretty close to the launch of each game, but they won't know the details until the games are ready to launch. As far as getting the maps, there's nothing you have to do other than uploading. You should be able to just log into MCC on your Xbox when the update comes out, and the maps will be copied into your local MCC storage once you launch it up.
Okay, this is what this has got me curious, because you can only store 100 or 50 right now. Total.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good question.
If each game you can put 25 of each up there.
That's why I said last time there has to be an update for the whole file share system coming, or else they wouldn't be able to accommodate everything. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, the sad part is, you know, like, you know, we're talking about putting them up in multiple accounts. What happens to the other stuff?
What do you mean by the other stuff?
Yeah, we're talking about putting maps up on multiple accounts, right? Okay, what happens to that other the stuff that you upload on other accounts, how do you get it on your main account?
You can still save your last played game mode and map in MCC, right? Like your immediately last played game mode and map. I thought you could save.
I don't remember. Been so long since I've tried to do it.
Yeah, I need some investigating. Really don't
know. We might need some clarification on that from Postums.
Yes. Yes, I think we do. So there's a quick question in the YouTube chat that I'm going to quickly bring up. Spartan034 asks, what do you think when will the Halo TV show be released? No earlier than next year, that's for sure.
It'll probably be spring next year.
Because they're supposed to be doing all the filming stuff, I believe, starting, was it this month? Last month? Like principal photography?
I thought it was last month.
Last month. Principal for filmography, I guess. So, depending on how long the post-processing takes and everything, probably as early as spring 2020, if not later.
Yeah.
That's it for the news that we have to cover. Time to talk about the latest book that I've completed, and GT's completed time and time again.
Again and again and again.
Sorry. Again. How many times did you listen to it from the time I mentioned that we were going to do it to now?
Just twice.
Just twice.
Just twice.
But I've read it once and he's listened to it twice. That's just how things roll here.
Actually, right now I'm about halfway through Silent Storm again.
Cool. I've got a ways to go. We're still trying to figure out if we're doing Envoy or Smoke and Shadow for the next one.
We might put up a Twitter poll and see what the community thinks we ought to do.
That's a good idea. Because I will be reading it to and from Chicago, whatever book it is. So by the time I get back from Chicago, should be finished with, or nearly finished with another book. So sometime in August, we'll do another book.
Let's see.
So if you're listening to the podcast, head on over to our Twitter, put your vote in. Futch is recommending Smoke and Shadow, because then we can go into Renegades. Pins is also saying that as well.
Yeah.
Looks like the leaning right now is Smoke and Shadow, but head over to the Twitter poll, head over to our Discord, let us know which book you think I should be reading next to catch up. But in the meantime, Hunters in the Dark. I didn't realize how much I had missed in the novels until I finished reading this book. And this was released back in 2015. Same year that Halo 5 came out.
Yeah, it was Vale's introduction.
Yes, yes, it was.
Vale gets a whole book. Tanaka gets a comic.
Buck has a whole game and two books. And Locke had a mini series.
That doesn't count.
Yeah. Should we ever do a podcast on I know we do like the book ones, but should we ever do one on the films or features like the
I think we already Legends? Talked about it, didn't we?
Have we talked? We talked about Fortnite of the Dawn, but I don't know if we ever did Legends.
No, we haven't talked about Legends. I meant
we did Fortnite of the Dawn. Oh, no. Did we do Nightfall. The Fall of Reach animation?
I thought we talked about Nightfall. We've determined that we will never mention that again.
I'll have to go back and check the archives.
That one was part of one of the podcasts on one of the lore podcasts. We talked about that and how inaccurate it was.
Okay.
Well, I should say the extreme artistic license that was taken with it. And I do mean extreme.
You're talking about Legends or?
The Fall of Reach, the animated series. Oh,
yes. Yes. That Anyways, we're here to talk about Hunters in the Dark, not, not the movies for now, or the videos. All right, so this one takes place in 2555, a little more than 2 years after Halo 3. And there's a couple little opening short stories. First one is Broadside One, who was sent as part of a team to the Ark via the long way around to the with the Rubicon, which whenever I do these podcasts, I always listen to the Halo Conversationalists because they will point out little tidbits and connections that I don't get yet because I haven't read all the books. But I have read this book, and the Rubicon is the same ship that, well, it's actually the same expedition for Silentium, where they interview the Guilty Spark fragment?
Let's see. It was the...
It's one of those Greg Bear ones.
Third book.
It was Cryptum, Primordium, then Silentium, I think.
Primordium.
Okay.
Yeah.
Primordium.
Thanks, Fudge.
Thank you.
Yeah. The worst thing about that book is the story. The best thing about that book's the last 10 minutes of it. Or last hour of that book.
Yeah, the last two chapters in the book is where the actual relevant details are. The rest of it's just Chakos wandering on a Halo ring.
There is a lot of story there, and they're setting 343 up. They're giving you his backstory. And that's a lot of what the book is. But anyway, if for those who didn't know, spoiler, 343 steals the Rubicon. And for those of you that are paying attention and have read the latest books, keep that in mind.
Which book do I need to read to get caught up?
No. I'm not telling you this one. You just remember this fact. It will come up in a book that you have not read yet.
Well, I'm not going to jump ahead, but I'm just curious to know which book it is.
Well, we'll see which way they vote on Twitter. We'll go that way.
Okay. Pins is just saying all of them. Fudge is saying all of them. I just need to get my butt in gear and finish all the books.
Uh-huh.
So, Broadside One, who we'll find out has another relation in this book later on, was one of the members of this expedition. And there is the connection with Guilty Spark. It does beg the question of where is the Rubicon? I'm guessing I will find out in some book.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
And you'll find out what happens to 343 Guilty Spark too.
So Broadside One, who's the main person in this little short story, is one of the last survivors. Right. Yeah.
And this particular person they're talking about is the leader of that particular squad.
Well, Broadside is a squad. Broadside One is the leader. So it's Broadside One for
his
for
call
now.
Sign.
Right.
Yeah. They ran into trouble.
Yeah. Some stuff happened on the ring once the ring blew up.
Yeah.
So that happens, and that'll come into the story later. Then we have another little short story, and this is who we'll come to find out as... It was Luther Mann for this little short part, right? Not Lamb, Henry Lamb. I think it was Luther Mann for this little short story where, like, when he was growing up, his homeworld got attacked by the Covenant, and as this gives... getting glassed, that he was on, he and his family were on the one.
He was on a ship and he looked out the window and he saw the plasma beams striking the planet. And he said, pretty. And his mother went ballistic, as you can probably understand why, but this particular kid is six, didn't understand, or younger than six, I believe, didn't understand what was really happening. But from that point on, he had been always interested in covenant culture and had been a sore point throughout his life, to the point where his mother actually pulled him out of school and homeschooled him until the point where she couldn't live with her grief anymore and she killed herself.
Mm-hmm.
And then he basically attended high school and college through the public system, and he just never mentioned his thoughts again, which happened to come to fruition with the end of the war, just like, you know, he said it would, you know, and it, that's the way it happened. We teamed up with the elites and we made friends.
All harmoniously.
Yeah, not so much. But anyway, that was Luther.
Yeah.
Luther is the linguist. Henry is the technician.
And they are stationed on Installation 07.
They are stationed on a halo.
Yes. Zeta Halo. Which is also kind of cool that I'm reading this now, because, I mean, Infinite is on Installation 07.
Yeah. The whole reason they put this particular story, started it where they started it, is these two are investigating the halo, trying to find the control room. Because they can't find the control room. They can't find the power generators. Because Zeta Halo is constructed differently than the rest of the halos, obviously, because it's one of the original 12.
And it got downsized.
It got reconfigured. But in their, the neat thing is, and this is just one of those little quirk things that I've seen it happen before, and this has happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
You have people that work together. Some of them can't shut up, and some of them prefer to work in silence. Luther prefers to work in silence, and Henry loves to gab. So Luther had just basically went, sounds good. Apparently he had a pretty serious conversation with Henry, where Henry was telling him how he was sending all this stuff to the director's wife, and then she was sharing it with one of her friends that turns out to be Olympia Vale. But, you know, everybody's got security clearance for this.
But that catches him off guard, and he's like,
Luther about blows a gasket.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he like cut it midway through, and I think in the book he was like, wait, what did you do? Yeah.
Wait a minute. What's that?
Some keyword finally went off, and it's like, wait, I just missed something. What?
Light bulb. Anyway, that is the kind of relationship these two have. They're very good friends. I mean, they've worked together for many years. You know, they work together very well. They know each other's limits, and they help each other push their limits. In the process of their investigation, they happen to notice power flow going somewhere where it wasn't going before. Like, it just started on its own. So they follow this, and they figure out that it's not going to a good place.
Yeah, there's a countdown.
Yeah. They're basically trickle charging the halo, and they don't know where it's coming from. But they work out the math, and it's like, 7 weeks?
5 weeks.
5 weeks. Which and is really, really good, because I think they figured that out in his head. So really intelligent. Anyway.
Well, if you're looking at 400 numbers long enough, you probably figure out what they mean.
Yeah.
Numbers are a pretty basic construct, I guess. But they did confirm it with the other research teams on installations 03 and 05. So something was definitely happening, and it caused a meeting of pretty much the high uppity ups of the entire UNSC military heads, including Hood, Osman, General Zant, and Speakman, Captain Richards, who will have more focus on the book, and Dr. Iqbal, and someone by the name of Casper.
they basically have a meeting and to determine what they need to do. And they determine that the best way to get there is through the portal at Voi. But they got to figure out how to turn it back on because it's broken.
Yep. They've been trying to with little success, but there hasn't been much urgency to it. And now all of a sudden there's kind of a need to get it open.
Yeah. Like we need this now.
Mm-hmm. Because they wouldn't be able to get there in time because it's, I think, a 3-month journey to get to
with
the Ark.
With their newest experimental Forerunner enhanced drives. So this kind of places it like right after the Kilo 5 trilogy or shortly thereafter. They're still looking at 3 weeks to get to the Ark from Earth. So they go back and forth.
3 weeks was through the portal, I thought.
No. 3 weeks.
I didn't think they would be able to make it through subspace, period.
Or no, sorry. It was...
I thought it was 3 months.
It was 3 months in regular subspace, and they figured that through the portal it'd be 3 weeks. Or 2 weeks or something like that. Anyway.
I think it was like... 2-3 weeks, and that way they would have like two weeks left to actually get to the control room and deactivate the halos.
So they start discussing about how they're going to do this, and they bring up they should contact the Arbiter and ask the elites, especially ask the elites if they happen to know where the key ship is, because the key ship's what turned it on last time.
Mm-hmm. No dice, but we get introduced to the player 3 and player 4 in Halo 3.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not just random characters that you play in co-op. They're actual characters in the universe.
Yeah. And they play off of that throughout the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So
Inthos Ram and
Inthos Uzi Ram.
Taham.
Yeah.
Which, when we flash cut over to the elite side of things, I think it was it Uze who was trying to clean out a rebel?
Yeah, he's the sword camp master or blade master. And they open up with the elites with him basically hunting down some rebels that were trying to get together to attack the Arbiter. Well, they were actually going to attack a weapons factory so they could get weapons to attack the Arbiter. And Intho interrupted them. They describe a sword battle, and of course Intho wins. He contacts the Arbiter, and the Arbiter's like, "Great job. I need to see you here as soon as possible." And Intho was like, "Well, I was going to go home."
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, no, not really. Not like that, at least. He had planned to go home to do for some rest, but yeah. So he goes back to the Arbiter's keep, and this is where he meets Intho, and the Arbiter basically puts them and three other elites in charge of protecting a Huragok.
Just randomly.
Yeah. So I want to know where Adj is.
I was kind of wondering that too. We had this whole book of, we only have this one elite Huragok, like Huragok that's allied to the elites, but the UNSC and Oni have plenty of Huragoks lying around.
Yeah, at this moment in time, they've got a couple of dozen, I think, or at least a dozen. So where are they? Side note, you're not supposed to know that yet.
You're just going to lay that out there like that? Really?
Now, let's see. The Kilo 5 trilogy.
The Kilo 5 trilogy was before.
Yeah, it was before this. I guess it was not. You're not supposed to know. You're just not supposed to think of that.
Oh.
It's
like
not
just kind of ignore not, it?
Yeah. You're not supposed to. That's not part of the story. I don't know. But anyway, it does beg an interesting question. Where are the UNSC's Huragok on all this?
Yeah, you would think they would probably try to pull.
They have some. They have some that came from the Forerunner Shield world. I think those would be the ones you'd want working on the portal at Voi.
Yeah, seeing
it is a Forerunner installation, but guess
especially
not.
If all of life in the galaxy is at risk of going bye bye.
Yeah, but anyway,
just a guess.
The elites escort the Hergok to the portal. They go downstairs. And in the process of this, we get to meet two Spartans, along with Olympia Vale.
Mm-hmm.
We're reintroduced to Henry Lamb and Luther.
Yep. Luther Mann.
Luther Mann. We have Kodiak, Spartan Kodiak, and Spartan Holt. And Spartan Force. Spartan Force or Spartan Threes?
They're Spartan Force.
Spartan Force. Okay.
Spartan Force. I'm looking at the Halo Wiki.
Yeah. Newly created, by the way. Or, well, relatively newly created.
Yeah.
One of them kind of's got a problem.
He has a grudge, to put it lightly.
He kind of doesn't have one of his original arms.
It just so happens it was one of the elites that are on this little expedition.
It just so happens that it is Entho that is the one that cut off his arm.
Mm-hmm.
So this adds a little dynamic to this squad.
Some tension is going to rise.
I do like how they played on that, where the captain and Spartan,
Holt,
the other one, Holt, are talking in their office, and you know he's disappointed he didn't get to meet him face to face because you know he's never really met an elite other than you know on the battlefield, and the captain happens to mention the elite's name. And he goes, that wouldn't be Entho Strom, would it? And she's like, yeah. Do you know how Kodiak lost his arm? Anyway, dead sprint to them to find that nothing's happened yet.
Yet. Big emphasis on yet.
And we also find out during all this that Luther can speak Hergok. Anyway.
Well, at least a little bit, pretty impressively, too.
If you can speak one sentence, that's impressive.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like, the Hergok really wasn't paying attention. It was only really speaking to the elites until...
Well, it wasn't really speaking.
Well, right. It had a little, like, translation pad. But then, once Luther Mann started actually talking to Drifts, I think natively, actually caught attention of him and started talking a little bit more.
Yeah, I, you know, the Hergok really wasn't like chatty. It, at this point, it hadn't really started, it hadn't started working yet. And, you know, other than to take instruction, that's pretty much all the communication that was happening until he started whistling and using sign language. And then the Hergok perked up and started paying attention. And from that moment on, then he was a lot more chatty. I'll put it that way. Well, mm-hmm. as chatty as a Hergok can be.
Right. You can say he's more chirpy.
Yeah. To start with, and also, this is where we find out a little bit of back history on Olympia Vale and how she gets involved on all this, how when she was a child she was on a trip with her mother and they had slip space drive issues, and a 3-day trip turned into a 3-month trip, and after exhausting all the crew with her incessant questions, she started to read elite or transcripts of the elite's speech. And she actually got so good at it that she corrected the translation of said speech. And, you know, she's very focused on the elites and their traditions, things like that. And she's acting as a liaison between the elites and the UNSC. That way, Luther and Henry, which Luther can speak Sangheili, can focus on the work. So she's basically there to be a go-between.
Fails the new Phyllis.
Phyllis.
Pretty much. Yeah. So that goes on while Drifts is trying to figure out how to open the portal. I think there was one point, I forget specifically what it was, but like an argument broke out and Drifts was like, well, do you want me to open the portal or not?
Well, no, they were discussing the history of humanity and it got Drift's attention more like, do I want to do this for them or not? They were basically talking about how bloody the human's history was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can understand.
And speaking of bloody history, some little conflict comes up that started out supposedly innocent. So Kodiak found Entho in a moment of solitude or something like that. And
he was out training. He was just taking some training, practicing with his sword. And Kodiak followed him, watched him for a little bit, and then decided to engage in training with Entho.
He wanted to spar.
And
quote unquote.
You know, in typical well, sarcastic
humility.
Well, no,
oh,
more
you're going the other way.
Typical sarcastic human style. Kodiak, you know, the Entho says we shouldn't be doing this with live weapons, and you know, Kodiak's like, I'm a Spartan. We only train with live weapons.
Okay,
whatever. So they start going at it. And Entho, being the practiced swordsman that he is, starts looking for the pattern and determines there is no pattern to Kodiak's attack. He's not really having difficulty deflecting his attacks, although he does make mention of how strong he is. That surprised him. Well, in the middle of this, there is a loud boom, and the ground starts shaking, and things start falling over, and Entho gets pinned by a tree. A tree.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, the thing that went boom and caught them by surprise
was the portal.
Was the portal opening.
Yes.
So yay, the portal's open! Just caught everyone off guard and got Entho pinned in a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Under a tree.
So he, you know, he's thinking that Kodiak is going to kill him or maim him or something, but Kodiak cuts him free, much to his own discretion. And then it cuts back to shortly before that, where Luther and Henry and the Hurrgach and Vale are all kind of in the same room. The Hurrgach's working on the portal, and Henry's trying to get information out of the Hurrgach, like, you know, what did you do this? What are you doing? And, you know, typical Hurrgach, I fixed it.
Not telling you how, just saying I
fixed it.
Right. I just did it.
Anyway, in the middle of that conversation, things start lighting up, the ground shakes, and they decide it's time to leave. They get outside just in time to watch the portal open. During that, Luther is meeting with the captain, and the captain's chewing his butt because they haven't got the portal open yet, because things and, you know, the Oni brass are coming down her shorts. And Luther basically looks at her, tells her to shut the hell up, and we'll get it open as soon as we can. And this is also where we learn that Luther has a daughter. that he has never met. And this plays a little later into the, towards the end of the story. And, you know, it's kind of one of his big regrets. So the portal's open. Everybody, all the team gathers around onto the elite ship for some reason. I have no idea. The
Mayhem.
The ship's name is the Mayhem. But they fly a Condor up to the ship along with the Marine squad, the two Spartans that are fully decked out in their armor, Luther Man, Luther and Henry, Vale, of course, the Hurragox up there, and all the elites. Can anybody smell, say, set up? They're discussing why they haven't left yet. And Entho's like, well, I'm going to leave now.
Well, before that, there's the constructors. Or no, the retrievers that come through.
Not yet, not yet, not yet. The retriever didn't show up until they actually start moving towards the portal.
Oh, okay.
But they're having this argument, and the captain is emphasizing that if he does this, it's basically declaring it's be considered an act of war, and they're kidnapping all these people, you know, all these UNSC people and everything. And Entho's like, I was doing you a favor and bringing you along. So you can either say it is your idea and take credit for it, or blame it on me. Either way. And
either way, so, I'm going because I don't want to die.
Yeah.
So oh. Shut up.
So I mean, as the Mayhem is moving towards the portal, a retriever exits the portal and starts doing what retrievers do.
Retrieving stuff. Namely Earth.
The Earthship, what was the name of it? The captain. I had it and then I lost it.
Endeavor.
Yeah. The Endeavor engages this particular retriever and destroys it. And then just as the Mayhem is approaching the portal, another retriever comes through that's more heavily armed.
A little more combative form. Yeah.
And it takes the Mayhem a little bit to destroy this one. But they do manage to destroy it, and then they go through the portal. They, like I said, you know, they're estimating 2 to 3 weeks in the portal. Well, they get into the portal, and the navigation officer basically reports that it's not going to be 2 to 3 weeks. It's going to be 2 or 3 hours to get from Earth to the Ark.
I think it was like 6 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
Basically, so un-freaking believably fast.
Somebody supercharged the portal. So they get...
And we'll find out who.
In the fight, Vale's injured. Kodiak's armor's damaged. The Hurragox fixes Vale, and of course they fix Kodiak's armor.
All to be attacked by more retrievers once they exit the slipspace portal.
Yeah. Yeah, when they exit the slipspace portal, they're attacked by more retrievers. They destroy 3 of them, and 2 more attack them. They ram one.
The last one.
Oh, by the way, the retrievers have the combined trick. They combine into one super retriever. Yay.
Superpower.
You know, for those of you that haven't read the Ghosts of Onyx.
With our powers combined.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they crash land, and luckily it's within 20 clicks of the control tower.
Mm-hmm. And it's... They only have a blizzard going on outside. They do some reconnoitering and determine that they can survive the weather. They have cold weather gear with them. Magically, they have the cold weather gear with them. They're awful prepared for being kidnapped.
Right?
During their travels, which this is a good third of the book.
Yeah, we'll skip over quite a bit of this.
Yeah. The very first thing is they've just started their travels, and this is where they come across blind wolves. And think of a blind wolf is a little bitty Tyrannosaurus Rex with no eyes. And they use sound and echolocation to find their prey. Well, there's also some other beasts that are, I would say, think of a horned polar bear. It's near as I can figure.
That's close to what I had envisioned. Yeah,
that's kind of what I envisioned as well.
Oh, and then there was the air whales, the leviathans.
Uh huh.
Which was it, Vale or Man who like
Luther
tried to mimic them? Luther. Yeah, Luther tried to mimic them, and got one of them's attention, and then eventually it got bored and flew off.
Well, yeah, he was just mimicking what he'd heard in recordings that was sent back from the forward end of Dawn. Or, well, that came back with the front half of it.
Right. The back half at this point is unknown, I'm guessing. Because this is 2555 and Halo 4 is 2557. I'm guessing Chief's transmission hasn't been received yet.
No, it has not. Matter of fact, I don't think that Chief's transmission was ever received. Was it?
It was.
No, that's right.
The beginning Infinity of Forward of Dawn. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a fight that breaks out with the Chifka? Is that what they ran into?
Yeah, the polar bear looking things is what they call them.
And then three of the Marines are killed. Vale is injured, and here's a strange voice in her head, and it's kind of dazed to the point where one of these creatures, one of the same ones that attacked them, but this one is docile, but is leading her away. And we'll find out that the voice later belongs to the monitor of the Ark.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and these polar bears, they have one of the trick. They emit a chemical that's like being a, like smoking pot.
So you like a hallucinogenic.
Pot or LSD, one of the two. You tend to see things that aren't there and you become really compliant. Vale and this polar bear, whatever. The polar bear leads her towards the monitor. The group that's left, was it four of them, three of them, Entho, Kodiak, and Henry follow Vale. The rest of them continue on to the control room. The group heading to the control room consisted of the
Captain Richards, Entho, yeah, Kodiak,
Heck.
And the other.
No. Kodiak and Entho.
Are they not together?
Kodiak and Entho went with Henry to follow Vale. And then
Uzay, Holt Richards.
And Richards and the other elite went to the control room along with one other elite, if I believe right. And
here we go.
There were three.
Wikipedia has it as
three Marines as well.
When Vale disappears, so Richard sends Uzi, Holt, and Lamb to track her, and then it's Richards, Kodiak, and Entho who go to the control tower.
Okay.
So he just had it backwards. And Richards broke her leg or twisted her ankle in the
pothole.
She found a hole. So now all the UNSC personnel except for Kodiak, Holt, and Vale are now back on Mayhem.
Oh, Henry and Luther as well.
Oh, they're still out there. Henry and Luther, yeah. And it turns out that the way that Vale was taken was pretty much almost to the Citadel.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out, like, unknowingly, Uzay, Holt, and Lamb got to the Citadel quicker than the other three did.
Well, actually, they all got there at the same time because they all met up.
Right. Yeah,
in the group that was following Fail, they came across armatures, which the way they described them, it sounds like they're describing knights. It doesn't sound like they're describing soldiers, because I don't know of any soldiers that have the energy stave, on their arm. That's only knights. So I'm thinking they're fighting knights the way they're described. They just call them armatures. They don't distinguish soldiers or knights. But yeah, the way they're described, they sound like knights. They come across knights. They fight a tree monster.
Yes. Tree monsters with attacking roots.
And it's exactly what you think it is. A tree monster. Where the group that was headed straight for the tower get a ride on a woolly mammoth and try to get picked off of it by pterodactyls.
During this whole bit, they lost radio communication with each other, which we find out later with Vale talking to the monitor that the monitor was the one that cut off radio communication. And he restored communication when Vale expressed her concern about it. And that's
We haven't introduced the monitor yet.
Yep. We'll get there in a second. So radio communication opened up just as the team that was getting attacked by the tree monster found a cave. So Holt radioed in Kodiak, and then Kodiak hopped off the polar bear and sprinted for them. And when he got there, he got attacked by the same tree, which ended up grabbing him and started to get the roots in under his armor. And I think it was like the armor was kind of straining under the, like trying to keep the roots out. And Uze took that opportunity to kill the tree while it was distracted.
Mm-hmm. They cut it down with their energy swords.
Yeah. So it's a dead tree now.
Dead tree.
It fell over. And they heard it in the forest. So now we should probably talk about the monitor, because we've left out a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Just a little.
Just a little bit. Wink, wink. Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Anyways. So yeah, turns out that Fail was being led to the monitor. And was it at the Citadel, or was it in a facility close to the Citadel? I never quite figured that out. Where the monitor was and where she was taken.
Well, she was close to the Citadel.
Okay. So the monitor was interested in her and started telling her, well, I guess at first she was trying to figure out what was going on, and someone was speaking after her head cleared, and it was the same voice that was in her head when she was hallucinating back in the snow with the mammoth, the big polar bear. And it was the monitor of the Ark, who had managed to integrate itself into the Ark central processing.
Yes.
Ridding of his monitor orb likeness.
And his name is 000 Tragic Solitude.
Pretty apt name.
And for those of you that are up to date on the books second time, you know who this monitor was. And if you've read the Forerunner, or if you've read the, I think it's Fractures, it is in there.
Okay. Something else for me to read up on. Oh, geez, it's going to be a heyday when I'm finally all caught up and you can talk about it without having to double check anything, isn't it? Yes, Pens, I get it. Fractures, thank you. So we learn that he is the one that activated the Halo Rings. Primarily, well, I guess not necessarily primarily, for one reason, as a way to get the humans to reopen the portal. And at this point, he's pretty much determined that because of the violent nature of all of the races in the galaxy, that, yeah, let's just kill them all.
Kill them all!
Especially after what was done to the Ark in the events of Halo 3.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of had enough of it. And he's like, yep, it's time for them to die. However,
yeah,
we later learn that he activated, or it, he, it, I guess monitors are mostly colloquially termed he, but either way, we find out later in the book that he got Broadside 1 to activate the rings. Because as the monitor, he can't necessarily activate the rings on his own, but in that hallucinogenic state, managed to convince Broadside 1 to go activate the rings. Tricky, tricky bastard.
Tricky, tricky, tricky.
And Vale starts to try to reason with the monitor and quickly finds out that the monitor is just crazy and there's no sense in reasoning with it. So there's, yeah. She's just trying to figure out as much as she can at this point and trying to, well, I mean, in talking with the monitor, she managed to get the communications back up, and she also found out that the monitor is the one that's kind of testing everyone who's on the expedition.
Testing's a good way to put it.
I think he used tests in the book. Like their tests are still like ongoing or something like that. Eventually they make it to the, or well, they, I mean, everyone else make it to the Citadel, and they're able to deactivate the halos successfully, which is good. They got attacked by Armingers after they deactivated the halos, I think?
Yes.
Okay.
By a lot of them.
Yeah. So they found the same little drop point that you find in Halo 3 at the end of the bridge. And I think they said that like some of them got... Some of them had
a portal. For those of you that remember the last mission in Halo 3, they were leaving the control room. They made it through the first little room. They were going through the second little room when they got separated. Two elites, Luther Mann and Henry, were able to make it to the end of the hallway and jump down the hole where the elevator is, along with the Hurrigok. The two Spartans and the other...
Intho. It was Intho.
Intho and one other elite were trapped and pulled into one of the portals that the armatures were using to get there.
So, yeah, it was Holt, Kodiak, Intho, and Zahn who got ported away. But it turns out that they got ported away to where Vale and the monitor were.
Or close, right? To them, yes. Or,
yeah, close to them. There was a gap in the floor, and there's this whole back and forth between Kodiak and Intho on if they could jump the gap. And Kodiak is asking Holt of like, do you think we can make it? And Holt's like, yeah, if we use our jump packs, sure. And he's like egging on Intho, and they make it over with their jump packs. And Intho's like, yeah, I can do this without a jump pack. Don't worry about me. So
Kodiak will make it over.
Don't need silly little jump packs. So Holt and Kodiak make it over, and then Intho tries to make it over, but then a whole bunch of Sentinels come spewing out of the gap, catches Intho near the end of his jump, and doesn't quite make the jump, and has to be rescued by Holt and Kodiak. What was the other point that Intho rescued Kodiak or saved his life? I forget what that part was. I just blew right over it somewhere. Oh, no.
I don't think we've gotten to it yet, have we?
I thought there was some point where...
Oh, the tree.
I thought it was Uzi that killed the tree.
Yeah, Uzi killed the tree. Or Wait a minute.
I thought there was another part where Entho saved Kodiak's life, and then after Kodiak saved Entho's life, he said we're even.
No, I think Kodiak saved Entho, and then Entho saved Kodiak, and then they called it even. So I don't think we've gotten to it yet.
Okay. So, and then Zion leaps across, and Entho hears Vale's voice, and they walk over to her, and she's in a shielded room, levitating in an energy barrier, because Vale and the monitor are having a discussion, and the monitor is showing Vale the destruction and the damage that the Ark has taken, and his justification on why he needs to send the retrievers. He has a whole fleet ready to send to Earth, and there's nothing that they can do to stop it. Yeah, and Solitude starts to send the Retriever Sentinel fleet Sentinel fleet to Earth.
He's basically, ever since Chief detonated the Halo, he's been making weaponized Retriever Sentinels.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And at some point, Vale basically says, kill me because I'm no use as a prisoner to you. And the monitor is like, well, that sucks to do that, but here you go. Here's someone to fight you. And it's Broadside One, who we find out is Holt's brother.
Yes. Earlier in the book, Holt mentions how his brother was on the super secret mission and just disappeared. Didn't know ship name, didn't know nothing. And during this conversation, it was let known that the Rubicon was dispatched to the Ark, and that Holt figured out that Bobby probably was on the Rubicon.
And yeah, so a fight broke out. Vale.
Oh, and by the way, Bobby, which is Holt's brother, we learned that in just a little bit, has been turned into a cyborg by Tragic Solitude because he was so badly injured by the polar bear beasts, whatever you want to call them.
And there was just enough human left in him that he was able to activate the halos under the influence of the monitor being a cyborg. So as the battle goes on, Vale sees Holt trying to say something, and at some point she gets knocked over to like the doorway in that energy barrier, and she gets that he's saying his name, Bobby. And once Vale says the name Bobby, gets his attention for a minute to stop fighting her. And that she starts to try to reason with him that, hey, this is your brother. We recognize you, blah, 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 blah. It stops him for a little bit, but then goes back to fighting her. But Vale puts up a fight, being in her unaugmented human form.
Vale puts out a can of whip ass. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
Before the fight starts, Solitude, which is how they refer to him throughout the book, allows Vale to talk to Luther, who has found a control room with the Hurrgok, and the Hurrgok has taken control of the installation away from Solitude. Hasn't taken control of the retrievers yet, but is working on it. So Solitude wants Vale to have them give him the Hurrgok and have the Hurrgok return control of the Ark to him. And in this conversation, Vale explains what's going on and basically says, do whatever you need to kill him. Don't worry about me, just stop him, whatever it takes. And that's why Bobby shows up and begins to battle with Vale. In the process of the two elites and the two Spartans finding Vale, they came across a data center, more accurately put,
pretty much,
which turns out to be Tragic Solitude's brain.
So, because he downloaded himself from his monitor body into the Ark.
Well, the way, the kind of the way they put it is he outgrew the storage that was put on in the monitor and became, so he kind of merged with the Ark systems. So they, Kodiak and the elites are run back and they start destroying these towers, which incapacitates the monitor for a little bit. And then during this fight, after there's a lull in the fight, and I can't remember how that happens.
Yeah, so the they start firing on Solitude's data stores, and Solitude's like, stop, I'll recall the retrievers back. And he does. And Broadside One, or Bobby, collapses to the ground, so basically like letting control of him go. And then Kodiak starts to tend to him, and then the monitor's like, you think I would stop so easily, and starts doing the laser eye thing that Guilty Spark did in Halo 3. And Bobby had enough time to jump up, grab onto the monitor, and the monitor, I think, fired at him and caused him to explode and took the monitor with it.
Well, what happened was they stopped firing on his data stores. They all kind of gathered into the room, but Luther and the Hurgok were still in the control room trying to take control of the retrievers. So once the Hurgok took control of the retrievers, the monitor was felt betrayed, and then started to attack.
And I think eventually the monitor severed the connection completely from the monitor to the data stores.
Well, the monitor basically was destroyed. So,
and we kind of skipped over this part at one point, but in the midst of after they disabled the halos and whatnot, Henry Lamb got curious in some jumbled up mess that I think turned out to be probably a Watcher and bit his throat off. So Henry Lamb died.
It was a Sentinel. It was an aggressor. It was an aggressor Sentinel.
So Henry Lamb died.
That happened shortly after they jumped down the hole.
Okay. Another little fun fact that I learned from the Halo conversationalists: the base that you see in Halo Wars 2 near the very beginning where you get Isabel, that's the Henry Lamb Research Facility.
Mm-hmm. Which begs the question, if they've populated the Ark with all this research, why isn't there a ship in orbit? Or even the remnants of a ship when the Spirit of Fire shows up?
Because the Banished just wiped them out or drove them away?
There would still be debris.
Depends on how long ago. Maybe it fell all to the Ark. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. So either, I think it was Holt that commended Vale on her. It was either Holt or Kodiak commended Vale on her fighting Holt. Bobby. Holt. And seriously recommended her joining the Spartan program, which we find out later that she did.
Earlier in the book, Holt surprises Vale, and Vale reacts physically and actually knocks Kodiak off balance, which is a lot to be said for someone knocking a Spartan off balance. So he's, throughout the whole book, he's kind of taking a shine to her. So, you know, that's kind of where the relationship is at this point.
Then they all head home. They get back, and Richards is given the Medal of Honor and offered a promotion, which she declines. And Entho also tries to extend an olive branch to Kodiak, offering him a tour of St. Helios, basically, and Kodiak declines.
Yeah, he's like, I think I'm going to take a break from planets that have people that want to kill me for a while. I don't blame him.
And then we hear that there's expeditions being manned to go to the Ark, and Luther basically says he wants to take a break. Hopefully we'll get back to the Ark, but he has his daughter to go find.
Yeah, that he decides that's his priority, which I don't blame him.
Yeah, after the whole galaxy nearly dies, it's probably commendable. And that's pretty much the book.
And yes, we skipped over a lot of it.
And if you want to get that detail, then read the book or go listen to Halo Conversationalists or Podcast Evolve, because they're the ones to listen to it. If you really want the in-depth analysis, we're just here to talk about the parts that we like, the parts that really fit to us, and seeing how I'm getting caught up with all the Halo lore.
Overall, I enjoyed the book. It's got a lot of filler in it, but the story that is there is pretty enjoyable. They did a decent job introducing Vale, a lot better than they did with Locke. You got to learn a little bit more about Vale this way than we got to learn about Locke. You know, we got to learn about Locke's profession, not Locke.
Yeah.
We also, you know, it also tied up and explained some stories that show up later. So it's stuff that some later fiction ties back into it.
Mm-hmm. I learned a lot of things that I had apparently missed.
It's stuff for little stories, a lot of it. It is kind of nice to put some names and personalities with the elites in Halo 3.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that part. And having that additional connection from Halo 3 to kind of Halo Wars 2 at this point.
Mm-hmm. So all in all, I enjoyed the book.
I did too. And you did mention the filler stuff, but I think it was one of those things that made it a little bit easier to read. At least it helped me get it done more quickly.
Yeah, I mean, they did the filler better this time than they did in Primordium, where it got monotonous.
Yeah. That. Ooh.
This one, at least, the fact that you're bouncing back and forth between two different groups helped. Because you weren't just, we're walking some more. Oh, we got to ride on an elephant. We're walking, you know, stuff like that. You know, we're eating black scorpions from under a rock. Okay.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, like I said, it did kind of have that filler feel. And, you know, that's really the only real bad thing I've got about it. Or, you know, only real critique I have about it, I guess. I like how it introduces you to the Ark's Monitor. And if you've read the later stories, you'll see what I'm talking about when it comes to what they do with some of the characters and how things turn out.
I think Smoke and Shadow just might be the book to do for next one. We'll see. But
actually, that particular part pays off in Fractures.
Okay. Fractures is going to be an interesting one because that's just a bunch of like short stories. So it might combine those with, I guess, short stories that tie into another book.
Well, like Smoke and Shadows, the short story in Fractures for Smoke and Shadow, it's just the first chapter.
Right.
So we'll talk about it regardless. So, you know, that particular part of it, if we do the Fractures novel, we can just skip over, say, see Smoke and Shadows review. There are, a couple of the Fracture things. They're like Saint's Testimony is one of them. We've already gone through that. So it's the same story, just.
Yeah, fair enough. Again, vote if you want, either in Discord or Twitter, for what book we'll do next. Options pretty much are right now at this point, Envoy or Smoke and Shadow. And then we'll do that one in August. do a little bit of cleaning up here. Make sure you check us out on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Twitch. Or, wow, Instagram. I don't know where that came from. We stream on Twitch, Mixer, and YouTube. Our podcasts are normally on Thursdays. We've been doing Wednesdays during the Outpost week just because Thursday is usually a travel day. So today's was on Wednesday. And sorry for the technical difficulties for everyone who was joining us live. Hopefully we'll get those worked out for next week. You can also join GT and the Podtacular crew on Fraggin' Fridays. That's Fridays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We hopping back into Halo 5 this weekend as well. And then, like I said near the beginning of the show, hopefully I'll be able to do the achievement stream on this coming Sunday. Should be back in time, so we'll see. Been working on Halo Wars Definitive Edition with Laird, so we'll continue to do that. And you can check out the rest of our company commendations over on podtacular.com/company. We have 18 to 31 done. The closest two are still from downtown, which is killing an enemy Spartan from long distance. We have about 250 of those to go, and then First Strike is the next closest one, with about 800 of those to go. You can also check out our Discord. We are over there, kind of as the replacement for forums for the most part. We have a couple of people over there that you can chat with. Sometimes the chat gets busy, sometimes it's just a little bit idle, but feel free to go on over and check it out. We also have our Xbox Club. You can join as well. Anything that we have, just search for our Podtacular and you can find it. Another little tidbit of news that I actually forgot to mention earlier. Loot crate for Halo is done. As of this last crate, that's the last crate for the Halo Legendary crates. So we got 3 years out of it, and that's it. To be fair, a lot of people were pretty much done with the crate after this year from all the shipping delays and other issues that Loot Crate has had in the past, so...
Yeah, that could have gone better.
It should have gone better?
Should have, yes. There's nothing to be done about it now, but it sounds like Loot Crate is having issues across the board.
Yeah.
From what I've heard, I don't subscribe to any other crates, so I can't tell you. I've heard that there's been delays, you know, across the board with all their crates. So it could be they just got too much on their plate.
Yeah, they really do. It sucks that they had to do that, but yeah. Anyways, and then there's another little tidbit of news that hit the collector wave. There's a new licensed toy group out there. I'm trying to find it on James Miles Smith's Twitter. I'm blanking out, but Mattel had the rights through Halo 5, but now it's someone else who has it. Dang, I'm trying to find it. Halo Collector probably has it. But yeah, so the Halo Collectibles stuff is changing a little bit for Infinite as far as the licensed brand. It's Wicked Cool Toys, that's it. Looks like there's a lot of positive vibes with that as well. But we'll talk a little bit about that more on the next show. Just a reminder, I will be in Philadelphia for Halo Outpost Discovery. I will have 5 panels taking place there. They are the game show, which will hopefully be back and better than ever. There's going to be the community panel. There's also the newly added Machinima panel, at least for this location. There's also going to be the Forge panel. And did I cover everything? No, that was 4. There's one more that I'm missing.
You're the one doing community, the panels.
Community, game show, Forge, Machinima, podcast. That's the other one. That's another new one as well. So come visit me in Philly. I also have some special stuff that I'll be giving out. They're custom pins specifically for Outpost. I'll post a picture on Friday, so for those that are attending can come and grab one. Just remember, come up to me and say, keep on fragging trucks, and you will get yourself a pin. That's going to wrap it up for the podcast tonight. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in and listening. We hope to catch you on our next podcast. We'll be back to our regular scheduled time for the next one. And please vote on the next book. Until then, keep on fragging faulty monitors.